Be you, be true to who you are, and let it take you wherever it will.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we welcome Lloyd Pierce, the assistant coach for the Indiana Pacers. Coach Pierce brings a wealth of experience from nearly two decades in the NBA coaching ranks. He began his professional coaching journey with Santa Clara University and then the Cleveland Cavaliers before joining the Golden State Warriors as a player development coach. He later spent 5 years with the Philadelphia 76ers, where he helped lay the foundation for the rise into one of the Eastern Conference's top contenders. Pierce then earned the head coaching position with the Atlanta Hawks, where he guided a young roster and gained valuable leadership experience. After Atlanta, he joined the Indiana Pacers staff, bringing his experience and steady presence to Rick Carlisle's bench. Known for his player development work and ability to connect with athletes, Pierce has had his hand in shaping the careers of multiple NBA stars. His impact extends beyond the court, as he has been a strong voice on issues of leadership and community engagement throughout his career. In this episode, we discuss what lessons he learned from his first head coaching experience in the NBA, how going from a head coach to an assistant changed his perspective as a coach, and a breakdown of game planning for that next opponent. Please welcome to the podcast, Lloyd Pierce. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. Welcome, everyone. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. You have Alan Major, Doug Caputo here today. Our special guest is none other than the assistant coach with the Indiana Pacers, Coach Lloyd Pierce. Coach Pierce, welcome to the podcast. What's going on?
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, man. Appreciate you taking the time. Good to see you again.
Likewise.
Coach, you first off, I mean, you've had a tremendous experience from playing career all the way on from college, Santa Clara, going on overseas. I know you hit a couple different spots, but then having a heavy background in the NBA, I'm sure there's a lot of people who would love to hear your story, because I know you probably touched a bunch of different people in the audiences and people watching mine. So a lot of things to go over, but I guess first, we always like to just bring people back to their roots, initially where it started. And after Santa Clara, as I said, you played professionally overseas, a couple different places, Mexico, Australia, Germany, Turkey. But what did those 4 years abroad, because there's a bunch of different styles of play internationally, there's a bunch of different coaching tactics and tendencies. Did those abroad years teach you anything about the game that you still carry to this day as a coach?
No.
Short and sweet.
Just being honest, playing overseas was not for me. I spent the first year out of college working at Morgan Stanley Dean Witter. I wanted to play after that year. I just felt like, man, this is too soon to be doing this. And I did it for a year, a little marketing internship. And then I played in Mexico for 2 years and enjoyed it. Short seasons in Guadalajara, Mexico. I went to China. I was there for a month in a relegation tournament. I played a full year in the Bundesliga in Germany. Really enjoyed it. Too long of a season, 10 months. Went to Turkey, was there for a week and said, I'm done. I love basketball. I loved playing. The professional career was not in the cards for me to extend my career. And my college coach, Dick Davey, at the time at Santa Clara University, I think when I finished playing in Germany, offered me a job when I was done. And I had never thought about coaching, didn't have any aspirations to coach. And as coach always did, he put a bug in my ear and spoke it into existence and held true to his word. And that was my first coaching job. But from a basketball standpoint, I think playing in Germany was really intriguing. The physicality, the league was good. It was a team that had just moved up to the first division. So we were definitely under budget, under man. We had a lot of guys that were working 9 to 5 or going to school and then showing up for a 6 o'clock practice. So it's just a different process. So I enjoyed it. I just knew it wasn't going to be for me.
Was Coach Davey the first one that brought up coaching? Did he bring it up while you were still playing?
He brought it up when I was still playing. And he told me, he said, make sure you get basketball out of your system first, which I think is really important. I think it's really important, even if you're not going into coaching, make sure you get it out of your system before you transition into the other component of life. And that was important. It was important for me to actually go to Ankara, Turkey, to actually be on a first division team and go through it and realize 10 more months in Ankara, Turkey, I think this is going to be really hard for me. And the first 3 weeks when you go overseas are hard anyways, but I just knew it was time. And thankfully for me, I was able to know that, speak it into existence, and then start my next career right away, which is, I'm 49 and I'm over 24 years of coaching now. I got a leg up just in terms of the coaching experience because I was able to start a lot earlier than a lot of guys who play longer careers who are now trying to enter into the profession.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's funny, man. People come on here and it's either Sean Butler from the Celtics was on a few weeks ago and he was just the opposite. Like, yeah. Dad was a coach, always thought he'd be a coach. So most people either always think they're going to be a coach or no way in hell am I ever going to be a coach. And then they end up in it from both directions. So it's just funny that you never thought about it. Was there a moment when you jumped into it at Santa Clara of where you're like, all right, you know, I can do this, or this is what I really want to do? Or did that take some time? Was it in terms of that transition? You had peace with the playing part ending. But yeah. Then there's that other part of, is this next part really for me? Because you don't know till you get into it.
I've been fortunate and blessed with the opportunities that I've had in my entire coaching career. Santa Clara was probably the easiest transition a person can make because one of the great things about coach was when you were a senior and beyond, you just had a different relationship with him. First 3 years, I wanted to go to his house and speak some things into existence because you just hate how you're being challenged and how tough he was. I mentioned the word that coach always had for us was tough-minded. You play a little bit here, a lot of here, and I won't point to the other one, but it's required in this game, right? That was coach's thing, and it was always about being tough-minded. He didn't care what we played. He was going to kick our you-know-what, and that was a line you got. In the first 3 years, it took a little bit of understanding of how his coaching style was, and then you become a senior, and all of a sudden, you got this great dynamic and relationship with him, and he just wants to see you succeed, and he is the most helpful person, and he was like that, especially after you graduate. You could do no wrong.
Every right, exactly. Morning,
like, LP was great. He was the greatest athlete we ever had, and so much hyperbole. It's just interesting how it changes, but when I transitioned into coaching, I didn't have Coach Davey coaching me. He trusted me at this point. I played 4 years for him. I've been around the program. I got a degree. I did everything he promised that he would get me. He did, and I fulfilled that. So when I was coaching for him, he threw me right into the fire. I had scouts. I had player development. And again, this is pre-player development. There's not a whole lot of player development back then. He's allowing me to do those things with the players and use my relationship with the players as an advantage. And I got thrown into coaching right away. You're recruiting, you're scouting. I'm doing the video stuff, the old school video exchange.
FedEx. Yes.
We're a mid-major, so we're doing a little bit of everything. And I got thrown into the fire. So, yeah, you love it because I'm not sitting around waiting for an opportunity. I was granted tremendous opportunity right from the start.
And you said this was like the start, or I should say before player development was like a huge role in something that was so pivotal. How did you, especially doing like player development workouts, individual drills, stuff like that, like where did you go to come up with new drills? Because at that point, you probably didn't have the internet. You didn't have social media where you could sit there and look up 1,000 different things. So what were some ways that maybe you, hey, this is something that we got to work on with this kid. You come up with a couple of drills yourself? Did you make some phone calls?
No, I think one of the things that happens when you are at the end of your career, physically, I was still really sharp, really good. I was always a good athlete, was not that great of a player, but I was always a good athlete. And coach told me this, I think my senior year, he said, when you're about 25, you're going to be amazed at how much better a shooter you're going to become. Game will slow down. Your mechanics, your repetition, you will have known how to work on and spend more time on the appropriate side of it. And true enough, like I shot the ball well in Germany, and I was never a shooter and never had been. And I go to Germany and I'm a shooter on the team, and that was my role. And so you just understand like why, what happened. I wish I knew this in college. You know what I mean? There were those, I think we all have those, if only I knew this back then. And I had a lot of those moments towards the end of my career when I was around and when I was working out the players at Santa Clara, hanging around those guys, I can see in their games what I saw from my game when I was there. And I would just offer up as much advice, how to work. I could still hop in the drill. I could still work out with the guys. And so here's a 26, 27-year-old able to work out, still love the game, still love playing, still competing, but not for me. I can go out and do it with them, and then I can walk away and go do something else. And I'm doing that workout with them from a 26-year-old perspective instead of an 18-year-old perspective. And I think that was the beauty of the guys wanting the information, receiving the information, and then my gratification of being able to give them something that I know or that I've learned. So that was enjoyable. That was the beauty of it. I use the term, I get better helping others get better. And I always held true to that. And I still hold true to that. And that was the start of it.
Just to piggyback off of that, Lloyd, like I think you also had the benefit of stepping into a system that you knew cold. So yeah. you step into a system that you played in. So not only does just the basic player development stuff come easy because you just finished playing, you're able to develop through a system that you knew like the back of your hand, because that's the other part of player development is coaching guys and developing guys through skill sets through the system. And so you have the system.
Got to know how to run the flex offense at Santa Clara.
No question.
Yeah.
No question. Oh, man. They put people in the blender, Dougie. They put you in the blender, man.
And that's the beauty. I think the beauty of a mid-major program, we were heavily reliant on Nash and his abilities, and then Marlon Garnett was after me, or after Nash and ahead of me. We had two really good guys that were player of the years, but by and large, we had a great team in the time that I was there, but it was a system. And as you're saying, Alan, you know, understanding the system, understanding the nuances that I had to go through as a freshman and a sophomore and to earn playing time, those days are gone, but it was extremely important to look back and say, man, I'm glad I went somewhere. I didn't get minutes right away as a freshman, and I didn't have to play a style that just fit me, where it was just run up and down and try and get dunks and back cuts. And I had to learn how to cut. I had to learn how to make reads in the flex offense. I had to learn how to pass when the other guys were cutting. And then we were tied together defensively, and we were tied together offensively. And it was really important from the detail side of the game to learn it and to process it. And I think that has helped me as a coach from early on of just understanding how to teach a little bit better.
And I got to say, the toughest part too of that point, how you said about going freshman, sophomore year into college, like the toughest part is getting recruited somewhere, going into a college and not being that guy anymore. Now, not always the case, but depending on like people's scenarios, you're the guy on a high school team going into a college as a freshman. And now you're not the guy anymore. You have to completely rewire your brain of how you look at things. You got to be able to calm your ego a little bit, take a step back. But that's definitely a challenging thing that I feel like a lot of people don't necessarily talk about for sure.
Yeah, I think that's the challenge of sport all in all. The great teams have high character guys who understand their new roles and then try and excel in them. And the teams that are playing late, in any sport, the teams that are playing late have clear role definition, heightened character development from the guys, and then they're connected. But as you're going from high school to college to the pros and then pros to winning, it ultimately comes down to the same thing. Do we have the right people that buy into the system, that are connected, and when things get tough, they get tougher and they become more resilient? And so sooner someone can figure that out across every step, you know, the better off your program will be. And the good thing is when you actually find success in doing that, you've created a standard in which guys don't fit the standard. And you start weeding out or you stop recruiting guys that you don't think fit the standard. You know what I mean? Like, you have enough credibility to do it the way you know it should be done for you. It ain't going to work for everyone. It's not going to work everywhere. But if you can create it and you can enhance it and you find success, then people know exactly what to expect when they walk in.
Yeah, for sure. You want to get your program to the point where it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You know,
you want to be able to coach the guys you want to be able to coach.
And you just described your building.
Yeah.
So for the people to listen to this that aren't familiar, obviously watch you guys play this year, but to lift the hood a little bit, I've been around you guys enough that you just described your building. You have, not everybody belongs in that building. And you guys have planted a flag. If not before this year, definitely after this past year, you planted that flag in the ground on what it means to be a Pacer. What kind of guy is that? Is he a Pacer guy or is he not? And if he is, let's roll with it. If he's not, let's move on.
Yeah, I think the beauty of what we've done here, and we as a staff talk about a lot of the messaging that we receive from other peers and coaches and people that have watched us all year, and a couple words continue to stand out: remarkable, inspiring, change the brand of the game, really connected, things of that nature. That's for everyone, honestly. It isn't just for our group. It's for everyone. It's just whether or not you're willing to, you know, buy into it. And I think credit to our players, all of them. I don't have to isolate or single out anyone. All of our guys are tremendous character guys. They're highly competitive. And they allow us to coach them and do things that may seem a little uncharacteristic or non-traditional, whatever you want to call it, for the NBA. It may seem out of the box. But rule number one is to out-compete, outwork your opponent. And we just figure out what's best for us in terms of outworking and out-competing our opponent and end up being pretty fun, end up being pretty successful. And when we got to a point 2 years ago where we get to the Eastern Conference Finals, I think our guys bought into it even more. And we go to the finals last year, and I think our guys just understand this is our blueprint. We have to play hard. We got to play together. We got to move the ball. We got to cut. We got to pick up full court, whatever the case may be. But that's for anyone. Anyone that wants to win will take on that first challenge of let's just outwork our opponent.
And Coach, I wanted to ask you too, going from a head coaching position to ultimately now being the assistant coach with the Pacers, that transition, how was it making the transition from a head coach to an assistant coach? And did it really change your mindset as to how you viewed, I guess, viewed the head coach or viewed how you can help best assist with the head coach?
Yeah, I was at a coaching clinic during the lockout, and I don't know if that's 2012, whatever the year was. It was at the Clippers facility, all of the NBA coaches and GMs, and very well received. And I remember there was a conversation, I believe Terry Stotts was a part of it. And I think it was his statement, and I could be wrong, but I'm going to give him credit. And he talked about preparation for a head coach ultimately comes down to being the best assistant coach you can be. It's not preparing as a head coach. It's just, can you be the best assistant coach? And that will help you prepare for being a head coach in whatever role that is. Are you maximizing that role? And I just thought that was a very strong statement to make. A lot of time, if I were head coach, I would do this. You're not. Let's just focus on being really good at what you are. Right. So when I left the head coaching position and I come here, it was pretty easy for me. Again, I had a great opportunity in the middle. I was coaching the Olympic team. I signed with the Pacers early July, and then I go to training camp for the national team, the Olympics in Tokyo. And I had 40 days with Pop and Steve Kerr and Jay Wright and Jeff Van Gundy and Ime and Will Hardy and Eric Spoelstra is on the select team and Jamal Mosley is on the select team. I spent 40 days with the majority of that group, preparing for the Olympics, coaching in the Olympics, and ultimately winning the gold. before coming back to be with the Pacers. It was easy to be an assistant coach because I was an assistant coach the entire summer on one of the grandest stages you can ever be. So I knew exactly what the role was, and I felt like I knew it better knowing that I just needed to assist Pop. We all needed to assist Pop in making the decisions for all of us. So it's refreshing to be an assistant coach again, trying to help Rick in every facet of our organization, our team, whether it's free agency, whether it's player dialogue, whether it's development plans, whether it's the liaison with the G League stuff. Forget the X's and O's. It's just understanding how to help in every facet of the organization so that if ever I am called upon to be a head coach again, I have still had the experience and conversations and dialogue in all of the other areas of running an organization as a head coach.
Yeah, no question, man. Talk about this, a two-piece question here. One, coming back to being an assistant after being a head coach, I know, correct me if I'm wrong anyway, it probably made you more empathetic towards Rick in terms of just his day-to-day, understanding his day-to-day, and there's times if he's in a certain mood for whatever reason, like, you get it. Or just the ability to maybe like, hey, how can I take things off your plate from an empathetic perspective? But also too, second part is talk about the importance of just messaging daily. Like when as an assistant or the coaching staff walks into the room and the team is in the room, just that daily importance of messaging, because you have so much time together, and probably one of the arts of coaching is being able to say the same things in different ways.
Yep.
So it resonates with the whole team. So I know that's a lengthy kind of a two-piecer there, but hit on the empathy thing first and then the messaging thing.
Yeah, I think the beauty of being a head coach is you can do all or you can do nothing, and you can interject wherever you want. You can have someone run your offense, you can have someone run your defense, you can have someone lead the player development program. And then you could say, hey, today, here's what we're doing, right? We're going to scratch what you've been doing and we're going to add this and make this the focal point. So I don't think I necessarily say, hey, let me take something off your plate. I think there's always something. The one thing you're empathetic about or you understand a little bit more after being a head coach is there's always something that's going to show up on your desk. Family problem at home with one of your staff members, car accident with anyone, traffic when we get to the city, what should we do? Should we leave earlier? Should we? There's always something that comes up logistically that you have to make a decision on. In those moments, just being confident enough, being experienced enough to offer whatever experience or verbal support that the coach may need. Hey, LP, what should we do? You think we should fly a day early? You think we should stay over? I've had 18 years of experience in this league to be able to strongly suggest something one way or the other. And also to be able to say, hey, that's not that big a deal. I think we can just let someone else handle it and take it completely off his plate and not make it more than what it needs to be. Yeah, I think you just realize it's more than just let me draw up a play, put it on his desk and say, we need to run that tomorrow. That's the easy part of the job. And I think the second part, our job is really challenging at times, and helping Rick is probably the greatest challenge, greatest goal, greatest obstacle is, you know, how to help all the time. So you talk about the empathy and you talk about knowing more about the job and then coming into it. It's the end all be all of being a former head coach is you just know what's coming up all the time. And so you have to be consistent with messaging. When I was in Atlanta, I had a great PR guy. His name is Garen. And Garen and I were together in Cleveland. And he got the job in Atlanta well before I got there. And so when I get there, I'm with someone that's going to be with me every day. And he alerted me. He said, LP, I'll give you some advice. One of the pieces of advice he gave me was when you're addressing the media in September and October, be able to back it up in April. Whatever you say at the beginning of the year, goals for the program, mission, objectives, how you plan on getting there. When you get to April, say, hey, I told you guys, we're going to be about player development. We're going to build this thing slowly. We're not going to skip steps. we want to win. We want to create a winning culture. It's going to be hard to reflect that in the results. But what we're doing, and so in April, you should say, hey, we had a challenging year. We knew it was going to be hard to get the results in the win-loss column, but we didn't skip steps. And I know at times it may have seemed frustrating, but we didn't skip steps. We were really intentional about players. You should be able to say the same message at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year, not to excuse yourself, but being consistent. You've evaluated your roster. You know where you are. You know what your goals are. And how you accomplish those goals are what you determine internally with management, with ownership, with your players. How you get judged is by wins and losses. We understand that. But to be consistent in your messaging is key. And how you do it on a day-to-day basis is part of that. It does take a lot of thought process steps in the summer to formulate what are we focused on? And then as you're going through every day, how am I saying this? How am I getting this across better to my group? What videos do I need to show? What audio do I need to play? What quotes do I need to bring in? How are we doing our film? And like all of those things factor in how you get your messaging across.
Yeah, no, I love that you said that, because it's just such a, you just want to maximize those moments, right? Whenever you're before and after those moments, you're thinking about the moments between the moments. So it's always a constant cycle of the next time you're in front of that group, like how do we best hit them between the eyes so they can process it. But no, I'm glad you addressed that. Good stuff.
And if that's what your PR person ended up telling you, I have to say, I think a lot more coaches out there probably need a PR person for their daily lives. Yeah. That would be phenomenal. Telling you how to be able to talk to the media, telling you what to say, what not to say, and make sure, especially if you're talking to a recruit, what to say, how to back it up. Yeah, no, that's great. But staying on the head coaching track, now, I don't want to get ahead for you, but just saying, if and when that next head coaching opportunity comes, obviously you guys have a great thing going on. But just looking back as your first time as a head coach, is there anything that you notice, at least in your personal self, that you're like, this is what I should change in that next head coaching opportunity?
Change, no. I think adjust. I get let go and you go through a couple of days. I don't know how long everyone's processed. For me, it was a couple of days, and you're upset at the world. You're embarrassed. And then for me, it was like 3 days. And then I was like, for what? Gave me a great opportunity. I got better. I got much better. I learned a lot. I learned a ton. And I know in my heart of hearts that what I was doing was I was doing the right thing. Now, how you're doing it is how you have to adjust. You have to adjust to your personnel. You have to adjust to your coaching and your teaching. Did I go too fast or was it too slow? Was I too hard or not hard enough? You make your adjustments, but that's the day-to-day aspect of it as well. Hey, we played 3 and 4 nights. We got to wind it back a little bit. We got to be a little bit more intentional of how we're teaching from here and not so much in trying to save our bodies so that we can perform, we can maximize. There are a lot of things that I'm extremely confident about that we accomplished in Atlanta that probably didn't show up. There are a lot of things that I know I just should have done them better. Should have done them with a little more enthusiasm, a little more intentionality. And some of those things were just going to take time regardless. No matter what I did, some of those things were just going to take time to fully matriculate and turn into what we expected or what we hoped. And I'm okay with that. I think really proud of the guys, still in touch with a lot of them. Celebrate every victory that they have personally, professionally. Love seeing that some of them have kids now and are married. And you know, part of what we talked about is just being an adult and understanding what responsibility was. And a lot of times you may be old enough, but you still haven't reached responsibility for adulthood because you're still just focused on me. And over the course of years, these guys have kids, they get married. It's no longer just me. You got to get home. You gotta put the car seat in the car.
Yeah, at nightlife is out. Yeah,
you're just learning step by step what it takes to think about someone else and put them first. And that's the essence of a team. It's what do we need and what can I do to contribute my part? And so I learned a lot on the job. I tell people this all the time. I was ready for the opportunity, not necessarily ready for the job. And we all position ourselves to be in a situation where we get an opportunity to advance, whether it's from behind the bench to the front of the bench to the head coach, whatever the case may be. We're all ready for the opportunity if we're doing the right things in our current roles. The job, no one's ready for the first time of anything.
Like, right.
Yeah. I didn't know that I was going to have to basically pick the hotels we stayed in on the road. I didn't know we were going to have to, and you can lay it out step by step, how many different decisions you have to make that have nothing to do with on the court. You don't know that player A is going to miss Tuesday's practice because, oh shoot, his girlfriend that we didn't know was pregnant needs it. Like,
yeah, you
know, those things pop up and you've got to make decisions. Is this a finable offense? Is this a conversation? Is this an address the team offense? Like, those are the standards you have to set, but you have to learn on the fly how to set them. So great experience. I encourage anyone that is a first time of any position to find role models, mentors, experienced people that have been there to just help them along the way, talk through those decisions and those conversations and how would you handle this? Get perspective. Doesn't mean you have to copy what they did, but it at least gives you perspective. Maybe they'll give you something you weren't necessarily thinking about.
Yeah, for sure. And it sounds like then this is the right thing you should do. You know, the farther you get away from it, you give yourself grace, because this is how I felt after when I left Charlotte. Same thing. Like, you're growing along. Like, you become a head coach for the first time, you're growing along with your team. And like, you're growing along with your staff. Like, you have two daughters, right? Like, nobody, you can read all the parenthood books you want, but till that first one shows up and it's all right. This is, right. So you're growing as a parent with your child.
Yep.
It's the same thing. It looks and it sounds like in the healthiest way, you give yourself some grace in retrospect because you are better for it and you are a better man for it. You're a better coach for it. You have a healthier perspective on it now. And again, I know it's benefited you as an assistant because it just, I don't know, just that mountaintop view just allows you to probably be a better servant. To be quite honest, it really helps you be a better servant on the other side of it.
And I just got to say, now this is no relation. I don't by any means want to say an NBA head coach to a Division III interim head coach has anything to do with each other. But God, I was an interim head coach for a month this past summer in between. And the amount of documents I had to fill out, the amount of things I've never seen that my head coach had to do before. They're like, hey, we need you to fill this out. We need you to do this document. It's just like, where are all these documents? It's just something new. I've never been a head coach, but from all the times that people say you step into that head coaching role, it's a completely different world. From that 1 month, I can say it was definitely seemed like a different world. But one thing you mentioned before in one of the interviews, and now this was a little while ago, but you just said every opportunity I make sure and leave each place better than I found it. Today, just as an assistant coach being with the Indiana Pacers, the run that you guys had this past year is evident that things are getting better and always will continue to grow better with that, with your organization. But what does it mean for you personally, just being in the role with the Pacers, your aspirations as a coach, just like leaving something better nowadays?
Yeah, I think simply put, understand what our job is as coaches, as leaders, as teachers. Yes, we are in an entertaining industry where winning matters and we're on TV and we're criticized at a high level and we're praised at a high level as well. But I think my job and the way I see it, and it may not be for everyone, it may not be for professional sports, it may not be, I don't know how we can put it all in one, but I am a coach. I am responsible for the development and growth of 15 players in whatever capacity that may be, whether it's on the offensive side, player development side. But I feel that it is an obligation of mine in my role, that's what they pay me for, is that each guy should be a better person and a better player because of our example and our teaching and our messaging. Our messaging is to say, hey, we want to win, but we're gonna treat this guy differently and we're gonna give him that. And it's not pure. And if the guy leaves after 5 years and we used him up and didn't give him anything in return to come out of this with, then shame on us and shame on me. Dinners are important, having dinners with our guys. And I'm a wine guy. I've had plenty of wine with our players, and we have wine guys.
Especially after being around Pop.
Yeah, we have wine guys on our team, and you have great conversations, adult conversations, real conversations with real young men that are navigating through their careers. And great way to do it is over wine, understanding why wine's important, why dinners are important, why conversations and being able to engage are important as well. So, you know, when you, by the time you get to the court and you're going through complicated coverages or you're going through understanding our system, you have a better relationship. You have a better stream of communication with the guys, and they believe you a little bit more because they trust you and they believe in your word and they believe in this guy wants me to be better on and off the court. And so I'm gonna go a little bit harder. I'm not gonna be as resistant in this situation. And if I am resistant, we know how to communicate better when things are, we're not gonna be on the same page. We shouldn't be on the same page all the time. So when that resistance occurs, we have a strong foundation of communication to where we can figure it out the appropriate way. And conflict resolution, crisis management, whatever you want to call it, we've gotten better at in our relationship, and there's a level of trust. And I think it helps. So the game is going to end for all of us at some point, but those situations, those problems continue to occur. And now you know how to talk to someone. You have someone to talk to, and you also know how to deal with it on your own in a way that you've seen, you've experienced, or you've been through it. And I think in general, sports helps all of us with that. So That's our job. Make sure these guys are better. Make sure this place is better. Make sure we are the examples of what high and great character looks like. And that will lead to winning on and off the court.
Yeah. No, I love that, man. It's ultimately really a partnership. Right? Because they're making you better along the way. Obviously, coaches.
I don't like the partnership then, because they get paid a lot more than I do.
Yeah, that part's not equal. Yeah, if you ever need 25 grand in a pinch, you know who to go to. But now, talk about you got a game in 2 days. And are you doing the defensive side stuff with
I'm offense? Doing the offense
side, you're doing offense. Okay. Game coming up in 2 days. Again, you don't have to sell the farm here in terms of don't get yourself fired when this comes out. But in general, talk about your approach to attacking an opponent. And just in a general sense, you keep it as basic as you can. Again, you don't have to completely lift the hood, but just a general. And I know I might be a little bit off script because we didn't plan on that, but that question just jumped into my head.
For us, we identified a style of play, and that's the beauty of having corporate knowledge and being together for a while is you know who you are, you know what your strengths are. We say system sometimes. We have a system in place that has proven success for us, and we're trying to stay as true to that as we can, even as players are going to be adjusted a little bit this year. But we know what our system is. We know we want to play fast. We know we want to play hard. We want to be unselfish. We want to move. We want to pressure. So I think for us, it's no matter who we're playing, are we doing our system? Let's start there. Are we running hard enough? Are we playing fast enough? Are we picking up and pressuring? Do they feel us? If none of that works, or whatever game plan, quote unquote, that comes after that, it's still going to be really hard. Because we're not being true to who we are. We're just trying to adjust for this game, and then we're going to try and adjust for that. And now you don't have a system. You're just trying to rely on your ability to be creative in your coaching. So we go first system. We go second. What are some nuances, some advantages we can find versus this opponent? From an offensive standpoint, it's just reading the coverages. If we're going to play Team A on Monday, are they a blitz team? Are they a drop team? Are they a switch team? Are they a zone team? If A, B, and C, then here's what we can do versus A. We can cut more. We can space better. We can play less pick and roll, and we can slip out early because they're going to be switching a lot. It's reading what the defense is going to do, and every defense has their system as well. So we normally come into a standard set of defensive concepts and using one or two things a little bit more versus those defensive concepts on that night. It might be A and B on Monday and then C and D on Wednesday. And you got to go into it and say, we're going to still run. We're going to still kick the ball ahead, but we want to space a lot more on Wednesday than we did on Monday. Monday, we need to cut. Wednesday, we need to space. We'll make the adjustments. We'll see the small advantages we may find. But at the end of the day, it's still being true to who we are.
Yeah, no, I like that. And that keeps it consistent for the players. They know that it's Indiana versus Indiana.
Yeah, first. Yeah. Our guys, and we have a team with really high IQ guys, and they know our system. They know how we want to play. They buy into it. But at the same time, you're not trying to put 10 new things in their head every game. And they're now on the court trying to process information as opposed to react to what they're seeing. We want our guys to feel empowered. We want them to play free. We want to play confident. We can't afford to have a group that's trying to process the information while they're out there.
No doubt. Or as Tark would say, the more you give them, the slower their feet get.
Yeah, sure.
Good stuff.
Coach, we always like to typically wrap it up with just one final question, and that really is just to put the bow on top. Looking back, your whole career so far, as we mentioned, your playing career going back to Santa Clara as the first year coaching, if you had to give yourself in that younger position one piece of advice, just to be able to, anything that you have, that all of the information that you know now, what advice would you give your younger self?
It was the advice that Nash gave me when I told him I got a job in Cleveland. It was my first year in the NBA. I knew three people prior to getting the job. It was Rex Chapman, Steve Nash, and Dave Fizdale. That was it. Personally, those were the three people that I knew in the league. And I hit them up and I said, hey, I just got hired by Cleveland. I'm going to be doing player development. Any advice for me? And he said, LP, just be you. He said, there's a lot of people that come into the league and think they have to be something or someone based on what they've seen in the past. You got to be the energy guy. You got to be this guy. You gotta be the guy that gets up at 6 a.m. and he's in the gym. Just be you, be your authentic self. He said, we can see through the guy that's trying too hard. And I say that because I get a lot of questions about, hey, what do I need to do to get into the NBA? What do I need to do this? What do I need to do? The question I always say, what do you want to do? If your answer is, I just want to get in the NBA, then you're in the wrong profession. If your answer is, I want to be a coach. And I want more experience, or I want to grow. I get that. I get that our league is the highest in terms of our sport. But if you want to coach, you can coach a lot of places. And if you're good at it and the opportunity presents itself, maybe you end up in the NBA. But if you just want to be in the NBA, that means you probably have different intentions. You just want to be around the players, or you love the lifestyle. Or I don't know if you want to be a coach more so than you want to be an NBA in the NBA. So be you, be true to who you are, and let it take you wherever it will. I didn't know I was going to be an NBA coach when I started coaching. I didn't know I'd be an NBA head coach. And I was an NBA head coach of 12 years in the NBA. And I attribute that more to me just being me and people respecting how I worked, how I approached it, my relationship with the guys, my understanding of the game and the league. I appreciated that. And I think I was appreciated because of me being me, as opposed to me trying to be something I'm not.
Yeah, man.
Man.
Can't put a bow on any better than that, brother. Whew. It's well said. That was a bat flip. Listen, man, as an Indy native growing up here, and I was a fan for the Pacers back when the ball was red, white, and blue. And it's been fun seeing you guys rejuvenize the city, because Indiana's always been a place, obviously loves basketball, but Indiana's always been a place that loves a certain style of basketball. And you guys are blue collar and unselfish and grind day to day. And there's a lot of people in the city that appreciate that. So you, in a sense, whether you guys know it or not, you've married your style to a city that kind of reflects that mentality, which is why the stands are full. And I've been to games where I can hear a dad saying, you seen them hard just die for that ball, son? I've been telling you that for 3 months.
It's pretty cool. I think that's the cool part of sport in general. Like,
yeah,
I was in Memphis when we had the grit and grind, and Memphis is gritty and it's a grind out there. Like, our team reflected the city. We try to do that in Philly. Our team reflected when our motto was Philly real, Philly hard, Philly tough. All right, we had to be real, because people in Philly were real. They tell you exactly how they feel. People in Philly are tough. Everything in Philly is hard. And that was our pillar. Brett Brown came up with three pillars. And we try to represent the city in terms of, we'll be honest, we ain't got it tonight. We'll be honest. It's going to be a tough year. Like, why try and bullshit Philly folks? You can't bullshit Philly folks.
Right.
So, no, I think it's a beautiful thing when you can mirror your program and your identity to the city, because they appreciate it. And Brett would say it all the time, and Rick says it. The people that come support us, you know, for some, they've worked up to buy those tickets.
For months.
They don't want to be the guy that's sitting out or a guy that's bitching about his minutes. You got to do your job. They did their job. They were able to earn enough money to bring their kids. You got to do your job. We get 82, they get one. And if that's the one they're there and we don't show up, that's on us. That's on all of us.
Wow. Yeah. No, I love that, man. That's it. It shows. It's evident you guys have put a stamp on this place in a special way. So, again, man, thankful for your friendship,
yep,
number one. And obviously, continued success, man. And we'll let Dougie land the plane here.
You got it.
Yeah, Coach, thank you. Thank you for just, as we said, sharing your time with us. And I know it's a busy part of the season, or I should say preseason, going into season. So thank you for everything. And everybody out there, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Again, Alan Major and Doug Caputo here. Keep working and keep rising, coaches. We'll talk to you all soon.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.